We moved on again, and Lee spent 10 of my new dollars in a deli. She bought an emergency cell phone charger. It operated off a pen-like battery. She plugged it into Leonid's phone and called Doherty, her partner. It was 10 after 10, and he would be getting ready for work. He didn't pick up the call. Lee left a message and then switched off the phone. She said cell phones had GPS chips in them. I didn't know that. She said the chips bleeped away every 15 seconds and could be pinned down within 15 feet. She said GPS satellites were much more precise than antenna triangulation. She said the way to use a cell on the run was to keep it switched off, except for brief moments just before leaving one location and moving on to the next. That way, the GPS trackers were always one step behind. So we moved on again. We were all aware of cop cars on the streets. We saw plenty of them. The NYPD is a big operation, the largest police department in America, maybe the largest in the world. We found a noisy bistro in the heart of NYU territory after skirting north of Washington Square Park and then heading east. The place was dark and packed with undergraduate students. Some of the food it sold was recognizable. I was hungry and still dehydrated. I guessed my systems had been working overtime to flush out the double dose of barbiturate. I drank whole glasses of tap water and ordered a kind of shake made of yogurt and fruit, plus a burger and coffee. Jake and Lee ordered nothing. They said they were too shaken to eat. Then Lee turned to me and said, "You better tell us what exactly is going on." I said, "I thought you didn't want to know." "We just crossed that line." "They didn't show ID. You were entitled to assume the detention was illegal, in which case busting out wasn't a crime. In fact, it was probably your duty." She shook her head. "I knew who they were, ID or no ID. And it's not the busting out that I'm worried about, it's the shoes. That's what's going to screw me. I stood over the guy and stole his footwear. I was looking right at him. That's premeditation. They'll say I had time to reflect and react appropriately." I looked at Jake to see whether he wanted to be included or whether he still figured that innocence was bliss. He shrugged, as if to say, "In for a penny, in for a pound." So I let the waitress finish up serving my order, and then I told them what I knew. March of 1983, Sansom, the Corangal Valley. All the details and all the implications. Lee said, "There are American troops in the Corangal Valley right now. I just read about it in a magazine. I guess it never stops. I hope they're doing better than the Russians did."
"They were Ukrainians," I said.
"Is there a difference?"
"I'm sure the Ukrainians think so. The Russians put their minorities out front, and their minorities didn't like it." Jake said,
"I get it about World War III. At the time, I mean. But this is a quarter century later. The Soviet Union isn't even a country anymore. How can a country be aggrieved about something if it doesn't even exist today?"
"Geopolitics," Lee said. "It's about the future, not the past. Maybe we want to do similar stuff again, in Pakistan or Iran or wherever. It makes a difference if the world knows we did it before. It sets up preconceptions. You know that. You're a cop. You like it when we can't mention prior convictions in court?"
"So how big of a deal do you think this is?"
"Huge," Lee said. "As big as can be. For us, anyway. Because overall it's still small, which is ironic, right? You see what I mean? If 3,000 people knew, there's not much anyone could do about it. Or 300 even. Or 30. It would be out there. End of story. But right now, only the three of us know. And three is a small number. Small enough to be contained. They can make three people disappear without anyone noticing."
"Ah.
It happens. Believe me. Who's going to pay attention? You're not married. Me either."
She looked at me and asked,
"Reacher? Are you married?
I shook my head. She paused a second. She said,
No one left behind to ask questions.
What about people where we work?
Police departments do what they're told.
This is insane.
This is the new world.
Are they serious?
It's a cost-benefit analysis. Three innocent people versus a big geopolitical deal, what would you do?
We have rights.
We used to.
Jake said nothing in reply to that. I finished my coffee and washed it down with another glass of tap water. Lee called for the check and waited until it had arrived and I had paid it, and then she turned Leonid's phone back on. It came to life with a merry little tune and locked onto its network, and 10 seconds after that its network recognized it and told it there was a text message waiting. Lee hit the appropriate button and started scrolling.
It's from Doherty. He hasn't dumped me yet.
Then she read and scrolled, read and scrolled. I counted 15-second intervals in my head and imagined the GPS chip sending out a little burst of data for every one of them saying, Here we are, here we are. I got up to 10, 150 seconds, 2.5 minutes. It was a long message, and it was full of bad news, according to Lee's face. Her lips compressed and her eyes narrowed. She checked back on a couple of paragraphs, and then she shut the thing down again and handed it back to me. I put it in my pocket. She looked straight at me and said,
You were right. The dead guys under the FDR drive were Lila Hoth's crew. I guess the 17th called everyone in the phone book and checked out the only one that didn't answer. They broke into their offices and found billing records made out to Lila Hoth in care of the Four Seasons Hotel.
I didn't answer.
But here's the thing. Those billing records go back 3 months, not 3 days. And the other data is in. Homeland Security has no record of two women called Hoth ever entering the country. Certainly not 3 days ago on British Airways. And Susan Mark never called London, either from work or from home.
Chapter 48. Use the phone and move on immediately was the rule. We took Broadway north. Taxis and police cruisers sped past us. Headlight beams washed over us. We hustled as far as Astor Place and then ducked underground and burned 3 of my 4 remaining MetroCard rides on the 6th train north, where it all began. Another bright new R-142A car. It was 11 in the evening, and there were 18 passengers in addition to ourselves. We got 3 spaces together on one of the 8-person benches. Lee sat in the middle. On her left, Jake half-turned and bent his head, ready for quiet talk. On her right, I did the same thing. Jake asked,